Yeah, thanks for having me back for this. So I'm going to talk about a paper which came out sort of like earlier this year with Ji-hoon Lee, who's a grad student here, and Ashish Shukla, who used to be here for a postdoc and is now at École Polytechnique. And the title is sort of a mouthful: bounds on gravitational end of the world brain couplings in holographic ADS3 black hole microstates. And okay, I hope at least by the end of this talk, you all know what I mean by this. Just sort of like a side remark, of course, I'm super happy about questions, so just please interrupt me if you have any. Okay, so what's the plan? The plan is to first start by giving some motivations and introducing end of the world brains. And then, so like the second talk, part of the talk will be to talk about the black hole microstates. I'm going to be interested in which are modeled by essentially two-sided black holes, where one exterior is cut off at some point by an end of the world brain. And these end of the world brains, they are sort of effective theories. And so really what we should be doing is we should consider sort of like general couplings on them. And in the last part, I'm going to, well, first give you the answer of like which constraints we managed to put on those couplings. And then after this, actually also show you how this can be done. Okay. So let's start with some motivation. Okay, so first of all, end of the world brains. So what are end of the world brains? They're solutions to the following theory. First, I just have the D plus one, generally speaking, dimensional space-time. I will later reduce the number of dimensions to three. And I give it a negative cosmological constant. And then, of course, this is not even enough to have a well-defined variational principle. So what I need to do is I need to add some Gibbons-Hawking-York term to it. Then the next thing I might want to add is if I want a finite on-shell action, because I don't know, I want to compute maybe the partition function, I need to add some counter terms. And so a solution to this, or sort of like the simplest solution to this system I can write down, is E plus one dimensional ADS space, in particular vacuum. So I'm just going to keep drawing these time slices of ADS, where the line here is the asymptotic boundary, and sort of every point in the interior here is an infinite distance from that boundary. Now, what end-of-the-world brains are? These are codimension one surfaces, which I can introduce in this geometry like so. Maybe let me pick a color for them. So I'm going to try to consistently color them blue. Let's see if that works. And I will remove this part of the space-time here. So now instead of having this asymptotic boundary, which is infinitely far away from points in what's called the bulk here, I now have part of my boundary being sort of in contact or like a finite distance away from points here. And the sort of like prototypical action we give to these things is the following. Let me get the normalization right. Okay. So again, I have a Gibbons-Hawking-York term for exactly the same reasons, having a well-defined variational principle. And then I also add a tension term. And here, let me divide this by the ADS length scale. So T naught is some dimensionless number. And then together with the prefactor and the L, this is a tension for this spring. Okay. Now. Yeah. Sorry?
The brain does not introduce additional gravity.
So when you, by variables, when you mean additional fields maybe which live on the brain, no. But otherwise it's just this T naught here, which is an additional parameter.
Okay, but it's not the gravity.
So this will be a parameter which in a way will define my model. And well, we'll see what it does.
You choose 3D the shape of the brain.
I didn't choose this freely. I will show you. There's an equation that has to obey based on this action, which I will write down now. Yeah. I will talk about this. But right now, it's just a hypersurface with some intrinsic tension. Okay, it's just like, this is just a Lagrangian. I want to solve the equations of motion. Okay, that's all I'm doing for now.
Why is the near end of the world?
Because that's the world, and here's the end, and you can't go further.
It's a
key. Yeah. Okay, so what we want to do is we want to vary the whole thing. My total action, right? And then I guess sort of everybody knows how to do this. So first of all, we get some term, which are my equations of motion in the bulk. So it's just Einstein gravity here. Then there will be a boundary term, which is sort of like a combination of the first and the second term at the asymptotic boundary. But there I want to set the metric, or like my variation, to zero. So there's some metric fluctuations. And then there's another term which appears at the location of the brain. Let's see if I can fit this in here. Okay, and then there's a delta ij. And at the location of the brain, I do want to allow fluctuation. So this is like a gravitating object, there's back reaction. And so I, instead of choosing Dirichlet boundary conditions for a metric, which is what I do at asymptotic infinity, I choose sort of the equivalent to Neumann boundary condition in gravity. So I set this prefactor here to zero. And this gives me an equation of motion for my brain, which I can nicely write as this. So the extrinsic curvature is proportional to the induced metric on the brain. And then there's this prefactor, which is T naught over L. And that also answers Bianca's question. So now you might wonder, well, what happens if I change this parameter T zero? For example, if it's zero, the brain will sit at a particular location, and this location, I mean, there's like generally like a large class of solutions, but I'm looking at one particular instance. And in this particular instance, we have time translation symmetry. So like out of the board, for t not equal to zero, my brain will sit here. This is some intermediate t. And then there's some critical value, namely one, with this normalization, where my brain approaches the place where the asymptotic boundary would have been. So up here, that would be t not equals to one. And then the solution stops making sense. Okay. But the boundary conditions themselves are just Neumann boundary conditions here. But what you essentially do by tuning this parameter, you, if you will, the back reaction of the brain generates more space-time here. All right, so there's just some back reaction. There's like different ways of sort of analyzing this, but the point is you can go to a coordinate system where it just looks like as if you cut out or cut off less and less of the ADS space. Okay.
Something fancy about the intersection between the blue and the white?
Right. Essentially because you're at the boundary here, the metric fluctuations just vanish. Okay. So that's right.
So the second term doesn't play any role.
No. This term doesn't play any role insofar as I mean, it does play a role, but I'm not going to talk about this here. Yeah. Okay. So the next question is, well, that's a funky model, but why would we care about it? So let me, I don't know, call this applications. And the main application, I think, I want to use to motivate this is that these are simple models for what's called the ADS BCFT correspondence. So the ADS CFT correspondence, right, is the statement that if I have an asymptotically ADS space, then string theory in this asymptotically ADS space is supposedly dual to a conformal field theory, which can be thought of living at the boundary. But here, you see, and as Sreen pointed out, right, this brain here intersects my boundary at some point, and so it cuts off part of the boundary, and what I'm left with is a conformal field theory, which lives now on a space which has a boundary, and so it's aptly named a boundary conformal field theory. And one would like to study those. And in fact, within sort of like the usual framework of supergravity, there's known solutions to this. The problem is they generally take the following form. So for standard ADS CFT, right, what we really mean by ADS, let me make an example of the dual of NA equals to 4 super young Mills theory. So there, usually the dual geometry is taken to be ADS5 cross S5. And now we have an n equals to 4, well, it's an n equals to 2 super young Mills theory plus boundary. And the general geometry here will take a following form of like ADS4 cross S2 cross S2 cross some Riemann surface, and these are all warp products. So it's really like weird fiber of ADS4 and 2S2s over like some funky base. And so this is, of course, relatively horrible to work with. And instead, one can use those models. Essentially, what one is doing is one takes ADS4 plus one of the coordinates here. And this corresponds to the coordinates here in the ADS5. And so one can think about this. Here? Yeah, that's like n equals to 4 on like a boundary conformal field theory where the bulk is n equals to 4, and then it can be coupled on its boundary to like some quiver gauge theories. Or, so these have been like, these have been actually like classified by Davide and Ed Witten. Like, I mean, those which like minimally break supersymmetry and the conformal symmetry. Okay. But the only thing really you need to sort of like keep in mind here that there's some sort of duality I can write down where I have a boundary conformal field theory here, which might be coupled to some additional degrees of freedom at its boundary. And so just hand wavingly, I can associate a central charge to this, so C boundary. And this then is a holographic duality, which maps this to one of these end of the world brain solutions, at least morally. And this C boundary is related to this parameter T naught, such that if C boundary becomes infinite, T naught becomes one. And this very nicely reproduces sort of like some hallmark features of boundary conformal field theory. So you can compute the boundary G function, which, for example, is a measure of the number of boundary degrees of freedom. Yes.
Sorry, like why the B CFT is because it's not the usual, like, I don't know, it is D plus one, like CFTD.
Right.
It's
so,
just like the boundary of the CFT, right? No.
No. So you usually your CFT lives on a sphere, for example, in this global case.
Yeah.
It's like sphere times time, and here it's a disk times time. And then you need to impose some boundary conditions for your fields on that disk, and this breaks part of your conformal symmetry.
I'm confused why you put a, like B. Sorry, no. Why usually it's like okay, maybe it's just is it just. Usually people ADS CFT or there is like the
no.
B, yeah, exactly, that's why I'm confused.
So usually it's ADS CFT.
Yeah, because you cut your CFT.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes. So, you know, you can think of this as like a CFT on the upper half plane or something, right?
Okay.
You should impose a boundary condition on the real line and yeah. Okay, but the upshot of this is these models are clearly only effective theories. And so this is a very like simple, almost trivial model. And really the question is, like here, shouldn't we like be, at least in principle, be able to add more stuff? And if yes, if we do that, then is there sort of like any constraint on what we're allowed to add? And this is sort of like the upshot, or this is going to be the edge of the talk, but very generally speaking, and it's natural in the sense of effective field theory expansion that here I should expect like higher order terms and derivatives, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, then, there is a second application. Let me call this here 2.1, and then the next one is going to be 2.3, and 2.2 I might talk about if I find the time. And that's black hole microstates. And that brings us to the topic of the talk. And so here I've just introduced this brain and sort of like usual ADS vacuum or maybe like small perturbations throughout the vacuum. But of course, there's other solutions to the first line here, so through the Einstein equations. And I can consider, for example, a two-sided ADS black hole. So let me draw the Penrose diagram of an ADS two-sided black hole. And this is understood usually as a entangled state, like the holographic dual of this is an entangled state between a right and a left CFT. But what I can do, I can try to introduce an of the world brain, which perhaps just cuts off part of my spacetime. And so I have essentially still like a two-sided black hole, except that one side terminates, and most importantly, do I have an eraser somewhere? Oh yeah. And most importantly, this geometry then will be dual to the state in a single CFT. Now you can show, or you can argue that these states also have zero entropy. And so these are really like pure states in the CFT, which look very much like black holes, but there's some structure behind the horizon, which I sort of cannot see from out here. Okay, and there's like a little sort of like extra, or you might be interested in this. So here so far, and I will talk a bit about this, right? The role, if I added like additional couplings, it's not really clear. I can play an interesting game. If in those situations I actually increase T to be close to one, the brain goes again almost where my asymptotic boundary is. And what I find here is the emergence of a third dual description, which is a CFT entangled with a CFT coupled to gravity, which then I can think of as living on this brain. And the interesting thing is that the geometry, so the induced geometry on this brain, in this particular case here, will be ADS Big Bang Big Crunch cosmology. And I will sort of like give you a classification of those solutions in a bit. But this might be one of the ways of actually including cosmology into ADS CFT and holography. Okay, so
but the brain is always hidden inside the horizon.
That's right. I mean, like you could take negative tension and it would be out here. It's not entirely clear to me what those solutions are supposed to be. But yeah, in those cases, the brain's essentially, you know, you can think of this as being where the asymptotic boundary is almost.
But is there like an entanglement between the CFT and the brain degrees of freedom? Or?
Yeah, so what you do to arrive at this other description is, right, usually what you would do in order to get the CFT state, or like the, say the partition function, you integrate out the full bulk, including the brain. And then you know like what your partition function of your CFT, or like what the state is. Now, the other thing you could do is you say, well, let's treat this here as essentially an asymptotic boundary, right? And so you integrate out the space in between. And then you can almost see, right, like the same arguments why you find a CFT here will also give you a CFT here.
But the brain will have still gravity.
So the brain will be coupled to, like there will be gravity here, and that's essentially induced by CFT loops. So on this side, you have this counter term I added somewhere. Here, I didn't add the counter term. And you can like show that this counter term, or like the absence of this counter term, essentially induces gravity on the brain. And then there's like a story of you could ask, okay, well, if there's gravity on the brain, what really plays the role of the graviton, for example, right? And the answer is that because of the Neumann boundary conditions, you will find that there's a graviton mode which localizes to this brain in the bulk. And so this has like an exponentially decaying tail away from the brain. And this is like essentially localized to the brain and only feels the brain. And this will play the role of the like lower dimensional graviton. Okay, good. So, I mean, there's like plenty of questions, like how does this work? How do we actually do computations there? And this is all pretty badly understood. And I'm not really gonna talk about this, but what I am going to talk about is if we consider these black hole microstates, yeah.
Why is it black hole microstate? What are the black hole microstates?
So I guess the easiest way of understanding why you want to consider this as a black hole microstate, well, I mean, first of all, it's a state in the CFT which is dual to a black hole. And it, like a state, like a pure state in the CFT. And one way, for example, of seeing this a bit more explicitly is that if you do a Euclidean preparation of those states, so I've continued to Euclidean time, then I this brain, sort of like the trajectory of the brain, then looks like this. And it removes part of the Euclidean ADS space here. The radius of the like the point where the like cigar pinches off is in the center. And so what's happening here really is a preparation of a particular CFT state. And you can think of this, right? Like, you know how you prepare the vacuum state if you like have a path integral, which you have like Euclidean time, which starts at minus infinity. But here we're doing something else. Here we're just like imposing a boundary condition at some finite time in the past. And this can be like an extremely ill-behaved boundary condition in general. And so you prepare like a particular state in the CFT.
But you would want to compute the black hole entropy by summing over all these states?
No, so sorry, yeah. I should say, so the wording here is sort of like associated with like Mark's old papers on like black hole microstate cosmology, which is really talking about those things. I think you shouldn't be thinking of them as like, you know, this is neither a complete set of states, nor are they like necessarily orthogonal. Okay. Good. So the point is now to answer the question. The point is now to answer the question, what additional couplings are allowed here? And I will restrict myself to a special case here for like a number of reasons, one of them being time, but then there's also like technical reasons. And sort of like give you a proof of concept how this can be done. And so first of all, I want to consider gravitational couplings on the brain. So the first thing you might wonder, oh, what if I add like a term which is sort of like proportional to k square, and this is boring, nothing interesting happens here. But in general, you could imagine, you know, why don't we add something like 1 over g Newton brain? This is now like a new parameter I've introduced. And then some Einstein-Hilbert action, but which now just depends on the induced metric on the brain. So this is like an intrinsic geometric term of the brain, which I might introduce. Second, I want to take a 1 plus 1 dimensional brain, or in other words, ADS3. And this has mostly technical reasons. One is that there's like a result I'm going to use, which is really only proven in 1 plus 1 dimensions. And secondly, the nice thing about this is really that most of the computations are most of them can be done analytically, so there one can like really find nice results without numerics. But of course, like this term is relatively meaningless in two dimensions. Instead, what we want to add then to the brain is JT gravity. And in fact, it turns out that you can redefine fields such that it's sufficient to, instead of choosing I brain, which is like this last part here, we'll add JT gravity and drop this tension term. And JT gravity, let me just write down the action here. Right, it's just Dalton gravity, so we still have Ricci and like some cosmological constant, and we can sort of like tune the cosmological constant, and this guy here now is a new scalar field we're adding. And then the third thing is I'm just going to focus on those black hole microstate solutions.
What is the dilaton in the higher dimensional picture?
So here, I mean, these are just toy models, right? So I'm like just effectively parameterizing some theory. And so at this level, you just want to think of this as just some scalar field which is localized to the brain. Now, there is sort of a question that, well, if we know, for example, like a full solution, what could this thing be? And the full solutions, well, I mean, at that level, it's unclear.
From the gravity in one higher dimension. Like, you cannot, you need the whole model to say what the dilaton is. It doesn't come from any part of the, say,
no, so the point is, it's simply not known how to go from these full solutions to these time models, right? And there's two ways of figuring out what can we do. One is, you're really smart and you like work on this and you try to find like a dimensional reduction and then that tells you there's a dilaton and it's related to whatever it is. Or the other is you take a purely effective field theory point of view. And you're like, well, as long as anything is okay with my symmetries, I can include that term. And I'm taking the second perspective where I'm like, okay, in principle, I can do this. Ideally, I would like to know sort of which properties of either the BCFT or the additional degrees of freedom on its boundary yield such a term. But at that point, nobody knows.
And so the T0, like instead of having the T0, you consider that actually?
Yeah, I'll say in a second why that's enough, but essentially it's just that the cosmological constant plays the role of the T0. Okay, cool. So,
what do we mean by the third option?
Oh, well, what I just mean is, you know, I've started by introducing like this kind of scenario. And in principle, one could try to also constrain coupling in like those kinds of scenarios. I'm not sure how to do this, but I do know how to do it in those solutions where we have a black hole and behind the black hole horizon, there is a brain. And so I will be considering brains, which are solutions to, brains which sit behind black hole horizons. Now, there's a question of if I find constraints here, do they carry over to like other brains? Maybe.
But are they independent of the second option, that the JK gravity? Because can we understand the black hole memory as a JT gravity?
Right, so JT here really lives on the brain, right? So it's just like some hypersurface and I add this action. Now, I can find these geometries in any dimension. So in higher dimensions, I would probably like to add just like usual Einstein gravity. So I think they are independent statements. Okay, cool. So then let me...
The time is wrong over there. So.
Oh, okay, what's...
Half an hour.
Okay, it doesn't matter if I used it up or I thought I still have left. Okay, so let's quickly talk about these black or microstate solutions, and let's classify them. So I'll be working with an ADS3 BTZ black hole. So just for as a reminder, right, the metric of this and in particular, I'm going, again, for technical reasons, take the planar limit. So x really runs from minus infinity to infinity. And the blackening factor here is just given by this quantity. And now the game is to find all solutions where I cut off part of like sort of like the left asymptotic boundary of such a two-sided black hole. So how this works, so I take some, I'm gonna try to find a trajectory for my brain, R of T. So this metric here has a translation symmetry and I will, like my solution, I want my solution to respect this. So this is why the location here only depends on T. And it just turns out that using the equation, which I've still written over here, and then a nice reparametrization of R. So I replace T by some other parameter lambda. I can get the following equation. And this here looks very much like a particle and a potential, right? Like there's a kinetic term, there's a potential term, and there's a total energy. And so in order to classify all my solutions, the only thing I have to do is to see, well, let me actually not do this here. Is to see which trajectories are allowed in my potential. And so I can draw this here. Okay. So the following, I'm just going to use Kruskal coordinates. Yeah, let me not write them down, but let me just say that I have a time coordinate, which goes from minus pi over 2 to pi over 2, and I also have a spatial coordinate, which does the same, call them tau and y. Good. So if we think about a particle in this potential, there's sort of like three different cases here. The first case is that my tangent t0 is smaller than 1. So what will happen then is that my brain, this place here is the horizon, will come out of the horizon at some point, turn around, and go back into the horizon. And so if I draw the appropriate picture, it will just look like this. Where's my color? It will just look like this. The location of the brain is just given simply by this relation. And as I mentioned, the induced metric here is a Big Bang, Big Crunch cosmology for those who are interested. Okay, so the second case, so I will call this the subcritical case because t equals to 1 is the critical case. Now, as I move t0 to 1, this solution stops making sense because this brain would sort of like collide with the asymptotic boundary. However, I can still find solutions to t0 equals to 1, which I will call the critical case. And the way they look like is as follows. So here I have, again, a brain which cuts off part of my spacetime here. Now they're sort of like, you might be wondering, well, do they really cut off the full asymptotic boundary? What happens up here? And it's sort of a bit unclear from just finding the solution. However, there's a particular scaling limit you can take to go from here to here. And that involves not only sending t0 equals to 1, but at the same time doing a Schwarzschild time translation on the solution while keeping a particular combination constant. So this t0 up here is your like boost or like your time translation parameter. And so I can go from here to here and find this solution. And so both of them seem to be like valid when it comes to considering black hole microstates. Okay, and then the last solution. Oh, the other thing I should say is that now the induced metric on this brain here is a radiation dominated universe, which starts in the Big Bang. Okay. The last. So there's two solutions really. There's this solution, and then there's a time reflected solution. I just decided to talk about this one. Like this condition here would get like another sign if you talked about the other solution. But they're related by Z2 symmetry, so it's sufficient to just talk about one of them. Okay, and then there's a third solution where t0 is bigger than 1. And this looks like the following. Oh, there are third solutions, I should say. And so here we have a brain which comes out of your black hole horizon and then just like hits the boundary at some finite time. And this corresponds to like a particle, which just up here and moves off to infinity. Okay, and here those just don't have like a really obvious interpretation as black hole microstates, right? Because it seems extremely unlikely that I can encode this part of the CFT plus this brain into another CFT, and so I will just not consider them. Okay. Now, of the other two, here I will just talk about the solution for the first case, and then the second I might like make a few comments here and there. But essentially, like the technology is the same in both cases. It's just this is just like mildly more complicated than the first one. Okay.
Sorry, I have my question regarding the second one. So if you consider a construction from top layer double state and try to post-select by boundary state, if you try to construct it in that way, you have to assume the time reflection symmetry. But in this case, so how can you construct such kind of state?
So, right. So, generally speaking, right, you might want to construct those, say, like using a Euclidean path integral, and that's what you can totally do for those solutions here. But even for those types of solutions in higher dimensions, this is not always possible. So, for example, if you try this like in four dimensions, then this T will be upper bounded by, I don't know, 0.8 or so, and you can't move this brain out. Now, the question is, what does this teach you? Does it mean that those solutions just don't exist? Or does it just mean that you know, the solution, like we need to understand the solution better? Or let me put it this way: not all solutions we know of can be continued to Euclidean time. And so here, again, I'm just taking the perspective, let's write down the solutions we have in Lorentzian time and you know discard as we need. Okay. Good. So, okay, then let me tell you the results.
Sorry, it's for me, because as you, for the first scenario, when t zero is smaller than one, you have time reversal. But when you take the limit t zero equals to one, you start.
Right. So the reason is that you don't take the limit, just as t not equals to one, but you do this while taking the following. Let me try to reconstruct this here.
So in that sense, you take some boundary condition by fixing the left upper to have the intersection with the singularity?
Not really, right? Well, I mean, maybe, yeah, in this case, maybe the lower. I mean, in principle, that's what you're doing, right? You're pushing this closer in, and but then you're like shifting the time such that one of the points here will be fixed. Yes. Yeah, which point is it exactly is, I would have to think about. Good. Okay, let me tell you the results we found, and then I'll tell you how you get there. Okay, so for the case t naught smaller than one, the JT equations of motions give you this. And so what you can show after a bit of math is that this just fixes like the value for lambda. Oh, yeah. Just fixes the location of the brain as promised. And then your solution for the dilaton in general looks as follows. So phi equals to phi naught. And this you can just see if you shift phi naught here, you can sort of absorb this inhomogeneity and remove this. And then there's a phi piece, which I will call phi one. Let me call this curly phi one, times sine of tau brain. If you know about JT gravity black holes, this looks like the interior of a JT black hole, this dilaton profile. And so really you start at some value and then at tau equals to minus pi over two, and then the sign essentially like flips as you go to power plus pi over 2. And we can form, or it turns out you can form the following combination. Alpha, this is phi 1 divided by g Newton on the brain. And I will just call this particular combination alpha. And you can show that the absolute value of alpha must be smaller or equal to 1 over 1 plus sine y brain. Now this bound becomes relatively weak as y brain goes to minus pi over 2. So as I send the brain all the way to the boundary, the right-hand side actually diverges. And if you look a bit closer, you can derive a second bound. And I'm not entirely sure what to think of this bound, so it's kind of nice to present this here, whether we want to believe this or not. But this would be a tighter bound. And this has to do with the presence of new what's called Ryu-Takayanagi surfaces, which cross singularities. So take this one here with a grain of salt, and this here is certainly a proper bound you can derive for that case. And then there's a similar bound also for the t equals to 1 case. The solution here, let me just write this here for the dilaton, looks like this. There's some alpha critical over 2 times lambda. Now I just parameterize the time here by lambda, plus some constant. And I can bound this alpha critical to be, in fact, absolute value to be smaller or equal to 2. This is the equivalent of the loose bound over there. And then there's a tight bound, which I also, again, put in parentheses, that this guy has to be identically 0. OK, so the bounds, well, how do you derive them? They come from quantum information theory. And the logic is this. We say that those geometries here, they're dual to states in the conformal field theory. Now, what I'm going to do, I'm going to look at quantum information theoretic quantities. In particular, I'm going to look at entanglement dynamics of subsystems in the CFT state. And it turns out that there's particular bounds on how fast entanglement can spread in those systems. And as we will see, the rate with which entanglement spreads depends on the value of those parameters. And so by asking that this state is a well-defined CFT state, which obeys those bounds, which can be derived purely within the CFT from, in fact, very few assumptions, I can sort of like rule out bulk geometries or like couplings for JT gravity when said information theoretic bounds are violated.
It seems to be arbitrary that you take JT on the brain.
Yes.
You take other model of 2D dilaton gravity.
Yeah.
Motivation to have GT.
So, right. So, the answer is yes to all. So, yes, it is arbitrary, right? Like, you, in principle, you can just like have a derivative expansion, for example. We just didn't do this. There is a particular motivation to take JT because those models, and I didn't mention this, they also appear in like recent work on the island formula and deriving like the page curve. And in particular, in 2 dimensions, what you do in those cases is adding JT to the brain. So that's sort of like the special motivation why to look at JT. But yeah, in principle, right. So there's this, and then you might also ask, what about like non-gravitational fields? You know, just like maybe add a scalar field to the brain. Like, is there a way of finding bounds for this?
Like you were saying that you have gravity because you put your like you choose Neumann boundary condition, and that's what. Why you have gravity on the brain.
Right, so I get gravity on the brain regardless.
Yeah, so you have to have at least the like phi r, right?
No, you don't. So this is like extra. It's a bit easier to see in higher dimensions. So in higher dimensions, I will just get Einstein gravity, even if I don't add anything else to the brain, just the tension term. But adding this tension term, I can sort of, so for example, if I add like an Einstein Hilbert term, which is intrinsic to the brain, then I can change the gravitational coupling on the brain, right? So I get sort of like, I get a term which is, okay, so when you do the math, what you actually get is a term which has a gravitational coupling, which is related to the bulk gravitational coupling on the brain. So this is the usual the usual gravitational coupling on the brain, then you could add such a term by hand, and then, you know, like maybe take this negative and you reduce the effective gravitational coupling on the brain. So this is sort of like just modifies the theory on the brain. And here I modify it by adding JT. But you know, you can modify this by adding, I don't know, the standard model to the brain. And people have been thinking and doing about this because those general models, I mean, for those of you who were around like in the 2000s in physics, these are like basically fall into the grand category of Karge-Randall-Sundrum models, where, you know, people consider like, I don't know, the standard model and so on those brains. Okay, good. So, what's the time?
Roughly how much time have I left? 10-15
minutes.
Okay, so I gotta just be quick. So the first thing I said, the bounds come from entanglement dynamics, and particularly the growth of entropy. And so first of all, we want to compute entanglement in those CFT states, and we do this holographically. How do you do this? First of all, the thing you want to compute is the Feynman entropy of some subregion A. Let me just write down the definition. It's the trace of the reduced density matrix on the subregion rho A, log rho A, and rho A. You get by tracing over the complement of the region A of your density matrix of the state. Now, the nice thing of holography is we usually can use the what's called HRT formula, which tells us that the von Neumann entropy subregion A is given by the extremum of particular surfaces IA, which are homologous to A. So again, the picture, the time slice, I pick some region A down here. And now I also use, I'm trying to find another surface chi A, which extremizes the area functional. I divide this by 4 g Newton, is homologous to A, and if I find many such solutions, I'll just take the smallest one. Okay, so that's the usual prescription. However, this gets changed a bit when those brains appear. And the way this gets changed is as follows. First of all, the homology constraint changes. So if I add such a brain here, then the homology constraint changes in such a way that not like chi A doesn't have to be homologous to A, but X union chi A has to be homologous to A, where X is some subset of the brain.
Isn't the brain inside the black hole?
Right.
And there you are.
Well, I'm just using the old picture, but like same story holds over there. I will draw a picture in a second, which hopefully makes this clear. If not, then please ask again, okay? So the fact that there are brains modify your homology constraint. RT surfaces are now allowed to end on the brain. And then secondly, there's another contribution, which is a dilaton evaluated at Ka intersection with the brain. So wherever your RT surface intersects the brain, you evaluate the dilaton and divide this by 4 g Newton brain, so the dilaton coupling. And now it's sort of clear that, you know, if I have an RT surface, so they could look like, you know, maybe this is like another option. If I have an extremal surface which ends on the brain and is smaller than this other extremal surface, then I can sense sort of what happens here. And if my dilaton is time dependent, which it is in those cases, this will affect the time dependence of this phenomenon entropy. And this might, this will change how fast information spreads in my state. And this way I can place bounds on it.
The same origin that the island was that when you have to change the von Neumann entropy because they have like.
Yes. So you can argue for both of them. maybe a bit more sophisticated. The change of homology condition really comes maybe from intuition of those more like honest to God supergravity solutions. Because what really happens is where like the brain is that your geometry pinches off. So really it wouldn't be a change in homology condition. It's just that the volume here is sort of zero. And so the LHC surface can connect to itself back there. And this guy, there's like in one of the papers I wrote with Rob, we have sort of like a, for like a particular symmetric situation, a derivation of this term. Good. Okay, so let's compute these RT surfaces in our black hole geometries. We have what I would call the thermal phase, which is an extremal surface which looks like so. Now I'm gonna draw like a, hopefully a picture what that's useful to Damian. So what I'm gonna do is I pick some region A down here. And I've drawn a time slice of the black hole geometry. So this is my bifurcate horizon, this is the brain, and here is some asymptotic boundary, and I pick some region in it, and then there's gonna be an RT surface, which looks like so and stays outside the black hole. And this has all sorts of nice properties. In particular, you can compute now the entropy using this formalism, and you find the thermal entropy of a CFT in this case, that's the name. So like the thermal phase of the RT surface, and it's time independent. Then the second one is what I would call the connected phase. And you can consider RT surfaces which now go through the black hole horizon and connect back here to the brain. Does that make sense? Cool. Okay. And the nice thing about this two-dimensional solution is that you can write down the area like very explicitly. And without actually writing it down, let me just tell you, it turns out to be time dependent. And this time dependence comes from a couple of different sources. One is that it comes from like a cutoff at the boundary. But more importantly, does it come from this dilaton contribution here and the fact that there's a conserved charge associated with those RT surfaces. Now, what's this conserved charge? So, I mean, just to maybe to give you a flavor of how this enters. So the area is something like 2L arcsinh tan y over, and then there's like a term 1 plus q squared, where q squared is some conserved charge, which in fact depends on time. And then there's like a dilaton contribution back here. Okay, so what is this q and how do we get this? The trick here is that if we vary the area of those extremal, of those surfaces to make them extremal, so we want the area variation to vanish, we again get like a bulk contribution, which is the codimension 2. So in our case, it's just dx. We vary this. This is like a differential equation, which tells us how those guys move through the bulk. Plus, we get boundary contributions. Now, from down here, the boundary term vanishes because I choose Dirichlet conditions again on those surfaces. But up here, I don't want to fix the endpoints here. I allow them to vary freely. And I get a boundary term which takes the following form. This is the tau derivative of your dilaton evaluated at the brain. And this guy here on the left is exactly my Q. And so what I find now is that this conserved charge for like a given solution depends on the derivative of my dilaton on the brain where the RT surface attaches. Okay, so the important thing then is this thing is time, time dependent. And secondly, it is independent of the width of this interval A, whereas this thermal solution, I mean, it's a thermal entropy, so it's extensive at large A, will grow linearly with this, as I increase the size of this interval. So what I can do then is I can go to the limit where A becomes really, really, really large. And at some point, this red surface will always be the dominant surface, as in like it will be give the smaller entropy. And the RT formula tells me that this will be the correct entropy. So from now on, I can just ignore this thermal surface and say, well, okay, we're considering just this connected face. And that's great because that's precisely the face which is which can like see the value of the dilaton and is sensitive to that. Okay.
Is your charge associated to a symmetry or just something that happened to be considered when you... No, sorry, I'm confused.
No, I mean, so how this works is you write down the area functional, right? And then the area function is independent. So you can parameterize this guy here by tau as a function of y, where y is this direction, and tau comes out of the board. And then the area functional happens to be independent of tau, only depends on tau prime. So you get like a conserved momentum, and that's Q. Good, okay. So now we know how to compute entropies and we're almost there. You have like 5 more minutes or 10 more minutes? Good. Okay. So what we can do then is we can just plot, we can compute the entropies and plot them as a function of boundary time. And so if we turn off the dilaton, how they will look like is this. This here is t equals to 0. It's my Schwarzschild time at the boundary. And this here is an entropy, which technically is infinite, but I renormalize it in a way. And so here we see that s of t here is roughly proportional to t and here to minus t. Now this quantity, this late-time behavior, in this like linear phase, is something that's usually classified by what's called the entanglement velocity. Now this is sort of like a standard quantity to use, but people mean different things by it. What typically people mean is the rate of growth here once we've entered the linear phase. But what I will mean by this is really like a point-wise definition, so I'm not waiting until I'm back here, but I just define it as a derivative of the entropy with respect to time, and then I normalize the whole thing with the equilibrium density and the boundary volume of my interval A, which is just 2 in our case. Good. So this thing is called entanglement velocity. It's really a bad misnomer because it is not a velocity, right? It's just a rate of change. But one can show that in 2 dimensions, this thing is bounded from above by the following object. And I unfortunately don't have time to give you the proof for this, but it's a nice proof. It's not due to us. But what it really only uses is translational symmetry of the CFT state, the knowledge of the modular Hamiltonian, and monotonicity of relative entropy. That's it. If you take those 3, you can derive this nice bound here. And in our limit, we're interested in where the size of A goes to infinity, this bound just becomes 1. So this guy's bound from above by 1. And we see that in the case where JT gravity is turned off, this really gets saturated at latest times. Now the question is, what happens if we increase our JT coupling? And what happens is the following, and exaggerate a bit here. So the asymptotic behavior here, I'm, by the way, restricting to positive alpha. So the asymptotic behavior here remains the same. At some point, this thing will, the entanglement velocity will approach 1. However, there are like intermediate times here where the entanglement velocity will exceed this bound. And from this, we can, this can never happen in conformal field theories. So we must conclude that the particular solution we've chosen, the bulk, is unphysical. Good. How do we get like a nice bound on this? Well, we do a late time expansion of this function, and because we could compute everything analytically, we can actually write it down very nicely. And what we get is that the entanglement velocity goes like 1 minus, and then there's a particular combination of alphas. This is minus, yeah. And sine, so like the location of the brain. Good. And because V is bounded from above by 1, we know that the second term has to be positive. Now, this term is always positive. This here can be positive or negative, depending on what exact value alpha takes. And from this, we get the first bound I quoted, which is this is smaller than 1 plus 1 times sine y prime. Good. Alpha is like a combination of, is it somewhere here still? No. So alpha, the solution of phi was phi naught plus phi 1 times the sine of tau, mm-hmm. right? And then alpha is defined by phi 1 over g Newton on the brain. So these are the property of the solution, property of a Lagrangian. And then I just make this dimensionless by multiplying a particular bulk thing here. Okay. So that's the first bound. The second bound, I think I'm probably out of time, so good. So I'm just going to say it in words. It turns out that there are more RT surfaces which start at a point at the boundary. And instead of ending on the brain, they actually fall through the singularity. But when ADS3, there is no singularity. So what we can actually do, we can continue the solution to down here. And it turns out that those contributions, there's for points below a certain threshold, there's 3 generic extremal surfaces, which maybe look like so. And the 2 lower ones, which go through the singularity, they're the smallest ones. If we draw them in here, let me do this for the white one. Then the entropy they give will take this form. Now that's problematic. You can show that they always give a smaller contribution than the one we found before. And that's problematic because the RT formula tells us that the smallest answer is always the correct one. And so the correct entropy as a function of time would do this. So it would have a discontinuous jump here. And that of course violates your speed bounds as well. And if you like analyze this a bit, you get a bound which looks very similar to this one, except that it changes this plus here or minus here and is a bit tighter. Okay, so I guess this is all I have to say. There's of course sort of like further things to do, right? One thing is like what Celine, for example, talked about is like more general fields, more general couplings, more general theories on the brain. There's a question of what happens in higher dimensions where some of the things I told you won't work anymore. So in particular, this very nice bound we have here, there's sort of like no way to prove this locally anymore. Like there's a bound that can be proven for late times, but not for like these intermediate times where we used it for. Also the asymptotic behavior at late times in higher dimensions is actually not one, but is like a much smaller number. So there's a question of how useful this is eventually going to be. Right, and then some of these constructions are actually used in similar, or like some of these brain constructions are modified and are used by people to, for example, construct new solutions for cosmology in holography. And yeah, in principle, they're doing things slightly differently than here, but in principle, one could try to rule out their constructions or at least say that they are consistent with those very basic CFT constraints. And of course, there's a question, are there more constraints, more objects instead of entanglement velocity one can look at to find even tighter bounds?
Thank you very much. First, it's a question by student.
I have a question on the HRT surface there. So may I ask what the derivation method of this is by gravitational path integral for this HRT, the holography.
Sorry, are you asking about this new homology constraint or? Yeah, so I don't think there, like for this term, there is a way of deriving this in the path integral and sort of like a replica trick computation. For this, I'm not aware of any path integral derivation, right? It like really comes from the fact that we know that in, well, it's a couple of things. We know that in full solutions, really the space-time is supposed to pinch off here, so the homology constraint wouldn't really be affected, but the RT surface could do something like this, right? It could go somewhere where the geometry pinches off and then take a shortcut there. Then the other thing is that really by using these conditions, well, it's sort of required to correctly reproduce certain behavior you see in boundary conformal field theories. So for example, if you want to compute the G function, this is just the thing you need to assume. Otherwise, you can't.
No questions? If not, let's thank the meeting again. And yeah.